Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the ultimate accountability. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want, thriving, and tapping into wisdom in every area of your life. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Or outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And I'm going to take some time, as always, to set the table before we go to the phones and talk about this thing, the ultimate accountability. Now, first thing to notice for yourself is, accountability sound like a good thing or a bad thing? Like, do you want more of it or less? Do you want to be more accountable or less? And in its original usage, the word accountability, it's, you know, being held to account. In other words, you are liable for it. It is on your accounts. It is on your books, as it were. And so being more accountable doesn't automatically sound like a good thing, except for the fact that when something is on your books, it is yours, which means it is yours to do with as you see fit. It is yours to do with as it occurs to you, which means that unless we have accountability for something, we can't really do anything with it. So this is sort of the dichotomy of accountability. On the one hand, it's like, oh boy, I'm liable for all those things. But on the upside, it also means that you have some provenance over them. You have some dominion over them. It is, they are yours to begin to work with and play with and improve and enhance and develop. And so in traditional accountability trainings, when normally when people talk about accountability, or they'll often use the word responsibility, but somehow that gets, people have that so mixed up with family stuff and personal stuff that in business they tend to talk about accountability. Who's accountable? And it's often used synonymous with whose fault is it? And so again, that's one of the reasons we're kind of not that interested in accountability, because it's like, I don't know if I want to get better at it being my fault, right? That doesn't just sound like a great offering. It's like, hey, would you like, you want to be accountable for world peace? What, you mean, do you want it to be my fault if we don't have it? No, thank you. But that's just one way of thinking about it. You know, one of my, a story I love, one of my old coaches, Steve Hardison, apparently this was a story told about him, not by him. So I never verified it with him, but he was brought into a company to help facilitate a board meeting. And, the board were all kind of arguing about who was accountable for the, the failure to hit the financial targets in the previous, 6 months. And finally, you know, so the story goes, Steve raised his hand and said, I'm accountable for that. And they, looked at him, and the CEO said, well, Steve, you weren't even working here then. And Steve said, yeah, but we're not going to actually move forward at all till someone takes accountability for that. So it may as well be me. And so there's a difference between what I'm talking about when I talk about the ultimate accountability than whatever notions you might have about fault or blame, or, well, it's on you to sort it out, and burden, which is, I think, the way a lot of people hear it. One interesting side note, there's also a difference between saying you're accountable and being accountable. When I used to host a radio show back in the days before I did Hay House Radio, I had another show, and it was an interview show, and I would interview guests. And I know I occasionally interview guests. We actually have interviews coming up in August with Dr. Robert Holden, a favorite here at Hay House, and Elsie Spittle, who was one of the very first teachers of the three principles and a friend of Sid Banks, those of you who have heard me talk about those things before. So we've got those interviews coming up. But I used to do this interview show, and people were remarkably reliable. Like, I would make bookings months out with guests, and I'd have some pretty big-name guests come on. And the only person who ever blew me off and missed a show that they were booked for was the best-selling author of a book on accountability, which I just always found kind of funny. Let me get to the point, and then we're going to get to the phones. If you want to get in the queue, the number's to call 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. Well, if accountability is our choosing, our taking ownership of certain aspects of our lives, certain aspects of life, then the ultimate accountability is the recognition that we create our reality. Because if you're creating your experience of reality, and if you listen to the show, you know I don't mean that it's your fault if you have cancer. It doesn't work that way. What happens is thought comes into consciousness, an experience is created, and that experience is brought to life in mind by the energy of mind, the intelligence of mind, and those thoughts are guided by that. And so reality is being created in you and through you. It's not like you're sitting there going, I think I will have a pony in this reality, and I'm going to have a unicorn in that reality, and I'm going to have a fluffy pink tiger in this reality. Right? You might notice that doesn't work so well. But nonetheless, your experience of life is 100% thought created, moment by moment by moment. And if you're willing to take the ultimate accountability, which is simply own the fact that your experience is of your thinking, not of people outside you, not caused by people outside you, not of life events, not caused by life events. Your experience of life is 100% created by thought and consciousness in mind from the inside out. And then we experience it back as if that's what's doing it to us. Well, when you start to recognize that accountability and take that accountability, life gets so much simpler, because now there's only ever one place to look. You don't have to change the world to change how you feel. In fact, it's a terrible idea. It's remarkably inefficient. It's like putting lipstick on a pig. It doesn't look that much better, and it tends to annoy the pig, right? It when you recognize, hey, I'm experiencing my own thought projected onto consciousness, then you can simply become a student of that. You can get a feel for how that works, and you can notice, wow, boy, if I let it, that thought changes, and then my experience changes. And if I open myself up to a deeper part of the mind, to a deeper wisdom, to a deeper feeling, then the kind of thoughts and experiences that come through are so much richer and deeper. And even as I'm looking at things that are really happening in the world and feeling compassion for people who are suffering and finding creative ideas for how we might resolve those situations in ways that benefit everyone, I'm still living in the experience of my thinking only and always. And so there's only ever one place I have to look for relief. And there's only ever one place I have to look for insight and new thought and wisdom and guidance. And there's only ever one place that I have to look for my next creative breakthrough, my next brilliant idea, my solution to whatever problem I'm seeing out there. So we'll talk more about that during the show. You want to get in, numbers to call one last time, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, 001-760-918-4300 outside the U.S. And we're going to begin today in Cincinnati, Ohio with Diane. Diane, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael. So I read your book, or I should say I listened to your book. I got the audio.
How is that, by the way? I've got to be completely honest and say that it's not that I don't like the sound of my voice. I don't mind the sound of my voice, but I have not been able to listen to my own book. It's very odd. How is it?
It was awful.
Oh, man, I was afraid of that. Oh, damn. No, guys, can we take that off the market? Okay, good.
I enjoyed it. Of course, I enjoy listening to your voice. I find it very comforting because you're just very honest, and your delivery is one that makes it very easy and comfortable to listen to. So I appreciated that, which is one of the reasons I got that. I could listen to it while I was working. But it was great. It was a great book. And I also listened to your TED Talk, which was
great.
Good. Yep, that was excellent. Enjoyed that. So having said all that, and I was hoping at the end I would just like, I get it.
Yay!
And I do, but I'm complicating it. Okay, I think, because
Whoa.
It's so simple.
Sure,
right?
that would make you human. Carry on.
Yeah. So I'm a yoga teacher, and so, you know, the main thing in the philosophy of yoga is that it's all about the mind. You know, it's all about what's going on up here. So everything else we do in yoga is to really just be aware of that. And so they say it takes conscious effort to switch your thoughts, to pay attention, you know, to notice what you're paying attention to, you know, go into meditation and do all these things to kind of tame it a little bit. So I was confused because it almost sounded like what you were saying was not to do anything. And that confused me because if I don't do anything, and I've been really noticing, if I don't do anything, then I have a thought and I'm like, yeah, it's a thought. And then all of a sudden that thought comes another thought. And before long, it turns into something bigger. And before long, I'm having a hot flash.
Yeah.
It's the monkey mind thing. So I don't understand the not doing anything thing. Or if I'm complicating that, or if I'm missing something.
Well, let's find out. How about that? So, do nothing is one of those things where it's a paradoxical concept. You know, in the Tao Te Ching and a lot of you know, Eastern spiritual literature, they talk about wu wei wu. It might be Wei Wu Wei. My Chinese is very dodgy, but it's the doing of non-doing.
Yeah.
It's thoughts without a thinker. It's doing without the doer. So it's not for me about actively not doing, right? Which is an activity, you know, right? I am going to not do now. I'm going to not think. It's simply allowing our natural inclination and our natural common sense to guide us. So if I don't have a practice, but I understand that my deepest wisdom is going to be easiest to hear when I'm settled down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the moment, even when I'm riled up, because I know the direction to go in, which is towards settled down, towards quiet, towards that space where consciousness expands back out and I have wisdom again, It will occur to me to do something in the moment. So it might occur to me to just pause. It might occur to me that I'm going to just have to carry on and hope it happens spontaneously. It might occur to me to take a walk, to take a break. It might occur to me to have a bath, to go to the loo, it might occur to me to meditate if I meditate.
And it might occur to you that that's just a thought and it's going to pass and go back to doing one of those things. That's the big part, that this is just something our mind is doing, right?
And that it's not something I have to fix. It's not a sign of a problem.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, that makes sense.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah. because I was thinking that I wasn't supposed to be doing any of those things.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing.
It was just going to kind of fix itself. And I was like, well, this poor thing up here, you know, if I were to just let it do whatever it wanted to or just let it go.
Well, what I will say, though, is what I found is that as my relationship with my mind has become less hostile, you know, so it's become less the enemy, less the monkey that needs taming, and more just this fascinating thing.
Yeah.
It does seem to settle itself down more of the time.
Mm. Okay, I get that too.
Yeah.
Because then there's not as many judgments and you're not...
Right, so I'm not thinking about thinking.
That whole thing. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I do have to say one of the things that really I thought was profound, and I probably don't have the right, have it quoted right, but you said something about when we allow ourselves, when we allow our inner wisdom to guide us, when we allow that voice in there to guide us instead of our outside goals or something like that,
yeah,
that's when everything just starts happening. And to me, I was like, ah, that makes so much sense. Because if we were just to be coming from that place of inner wisdom, remember that more, or know that that's our true voice versus all this other stuff, then it would be a lot simpler.
Well, you know, it's
and a
funny.
Lot more of doing nothing, right?
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned the TED Talk. After the TED Talk, Bob Hurley was one of the other speakers of the event, who runs Hurley Clothing. I mentioned him, I think, on the show last week as well. And he came up to me at the after party, and he was very effusive in his praise. And he said, look, that was absolutely great. But if you don't mind my saying so, it's kind of obvious. and I said, I said, Bob, I don't mind you saying so, because it's obvious once you see it. But the fact that it's so obvious to you might be why you're running a $200 million company and not stressing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people aren't.
Well, and the other thing is, this could be obvious, but being obvious and actually doing it or not doing it or whatever you want to call it is different. I mean, there's a lot of things that we're like, yeah, that would be really good for me, but...
Yeah, and that's absolutely, that's the difference between even on this call.
Sometimes we have to be reminded, clicked, and, you know?
Well, but that's the thing is, even on this call, a couple of things that you sort of kind of got, you've just gotten at a deeper level.
Yeah, and now it's the remembering it and practicing it.
Well, and again, if I may, what I have found in doing this work with a lot of people is even that is going to start to fall away.
Right.
Because it's like you don't have to consciously remember at night that it'll be day again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a certain level of accumulated knowledge, of accumulated insight, of accumulated understanding, at which point it's no longer something that you have to concern yourself with at all. And that's not an act of will. That's how it works.
Does that come from, and I can see that over, you know, my progression through my life, that there are things that I worked really hard at 10 years ago that I don't even think about now, that I know it's from my practice. So even this, does that happen, what you're saying, whenever you're mindful about it and you put some effort into it and there's some practice, and then it becomes less effort?
Yeah,
does
no.
Does even this come from the effort, or are
no.
you saying that it doesn't?
It really doesn't. And I came out of a mindful effort doing. Mm-hmm. I was a super doer. I was so good at doing. Just give me the thing to do. I've had clients yell at me. I had a woman that I was, you know, who's a very, very successful woman. And she actually yelled at me in our first session. And she said, just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Right. Yes.
But the truth is, this is an understanding, not a doing. When you see how it works, if there's anything to do, it becomes obvious. But we're so conditioned to do. We're so conditioned to practice. We're so conditioned to turn natural processes into practices.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really hard to really take our hands off the wheel and see that the car is on tracks and it doesn't need us to steer.
So, and I hear that, and I guess my thought is if you're a person, like I was most of my life and still have a tendency to do sometimes, you can tell, kind of type A, but also that my mind is more prone to anxiety, and that feels like the natural state sometimes, even though I know it's obvious, right, that it's not. That's not my truth. That's not who I really am. So my mind, just on its own, baby, it can go. And so to me, it feels like I need to put some mindfulness around that to understand that that's my mind doing this thing that it's kind of been trained to do and thinks that it still needs to do it, even though it doesn't anymore. And so
Diane, I don't want to kind of blow your brain out on your first time calling into the show, because I like people to call back. But are you up for one more? Can I have one more go? Okay.
Give it to me.
So there's two things that I want to say. The first is, there's a tremendous difference, a world of difference, between what's natural and what's become normal. Most of us live in an unhealthy normal.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha.
So, and it's an important distinction, because if it were natural for, if you were naturally prone to anxiety, then there would be something to do. But if dwelling on anxious thoughts and ruminating on anxious thoughts is just a habit of mind,
yes,
which I'm proposing that it is, I'm going to assert that it is,
yes,
then the natural inclination of the mind towards health, the natural direction of the mind towards settling, towards peace, is your friend, not your enemy.
Agreed.
And
the habit of the mind. So don't you have to do something to kind of help it out?
Oh man, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't that just be so satisfying if there was something you could just do? You're really wanting there to be something, aren't you?
Yes.
So, and I get it. But here's all I can tell you from my own experience. There is a deeper part of us. I sometimes call it mind. I sometimes call it wisdom. I sometimes call it the deeper mind.
Mm-hmm.
That knows exactly what we need.
Yeah.
And if we look to it, it will just occur to us if there's something for us to do or not.
Okay.
And all our ideas about what we must have to do, because if this, then that, and if this, then that, and if this, then that, that's actually just noise. That's not wisdom. That's the noise that sits on top of the wisdom. Because when wisdom speaks, if it speaks at all, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily like a voice, though I suppose for some people it probably is. It's just a feeling. It seems to speak below the neck. And we just know. And if you look towards that, you'll hear it more and more. Like, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, but when I was a kid, I used to have to go to a lot of chorus concerts, because the schools had choruses, and my brother and sister sang in choruses. And, you know, so we were always going to these concerts where there were choruses. And one of the ways that I passed the time was I noticed that if you focused in on one person's mouth, you know, even if there were 100 people out there, you could start to hear their voice distinct from all the other voices. You ever played with that? Well,
I get what you're saying.
In the same way, if we kind of put our attention towards that deeper voice, that deeper knowing, we'll start to be able to pick that out more and more from within the noise of all the thoughts that spin. And what starts to happen is the thoughts slow down all by themselves, because there's nothing running them anymore.
Brilliant. That just made so much sense.
Beautiful. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
You know, if it's so funny, because we are such a freaking culture of doers. And I'm one of them, right? I'm one of us. And it was like, I literally thought that they were holding out on me, my teachers and mentors in this understanding, that they just were, they weren't going to tell me until I did the advanced course, what the secret practices were. But what you'll find, and I can just say, the only thing I ever say, like the universal piece of advice around this, is stay in the conversation. The more you listen, the better life gets. The more you listen, the more you'll hear. And as you look more and more in that direction of that sort of inner wisdom and guide, you'll start to see it'll quiet down. And as it quiets down, there's a river of insights waiting for you in there. Let's go out to Virginia and let's talk with Heather. Heather, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. Well, I loved your TED Talk.
Thank you.
Absolutely brilliant and really resonated with me. And now what I'm looking at, I think pretty much what the last call I was talking about was, specifically, I'm working on cleaning out my basement. And as I'm going through this, I'm realizing I'm having a lot of emotional attachments to things and not wanting to get rid of it. So looking at my thoughts, what do you see that, is there anything you can recommend to me as far as my being accountable, doing these action steps to getting me past this emotional attachment to the stuff that I have?
Well, I mean, here's my first thought. Just the way that you've laid it out is the right thing to do is just get rid of stuff. And the obstacle is emotional attachment.
Yes.
So if it's okay, I'd like to just open us back up to the possibility that we don't know what the right thing to do is.
Okay.
We don't know whether to keep some of the stuff or get rid of all of it or keep all of it, or, you know, we don't know. Because we got too much on it right now to see that clearly.
Okay.
Right. It's like, you know, if you've spun around, let's say you're in a archery contest. I was going to say a bow and arrow contest, but that's probably how it's an archery contest. So you spin around with your bow and arrow and then you try and hit the target. Well, if you try and hit the target just as soon as you stop spinning, you're going to really struggle. But if you wait a minute, you'll regain your equilibrium. And then it'll be much easier to hit the target, right? That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we've got a lot of thinking about stuff, we've got a lot on it. And we know we do because we can feel it, right? We can feel our mind racing and we can feel like, inside. then that's like trying to make a decision, like trying to shoot the bow and arrow after spinning around without waiting for our thoughts to settle a bit. So how you map this out as a strategy in your basement, well, that'll be yours. You'll figure that out. But if you understand that all that's going on is I have a lot of thinking about this stuff, and some of the stuff you probably have more thinking about than others, you know, then your own common sense will start to guide you. And there'll be some stuff that you'll just get rid of because you want to clean your basement out and you don't have too much on it. And there'll be other stuff where each time you pick it up, you're like, oh, here I go. And so maybe you'll put that down for a minute and you'll get on. Knowing that, your thoughts will settle. And when you come back to it, it won't feel exactly the same as it did the last time because there'll be some new thinking about it. And at some point, you'll go down to your basement and you'll either look at it and you'll go, keep, or you'll look at it and you'll go, what was I thinking? Why did that ticket stub seem so meaningful to me yesterday?
Okay. So it's like looking at your kiddo's picture of the monster, and I'm kind of seeing this now of, I'm going to go down there, look at my stuff and look at it and relate it to your kiddo's, you know, picture and say, this isn't real. I really don't have an attachment to it.
Yeah, because that doesn't mean you have to get rid of it, but it just means that you won't hang on to it because you think it's doing something for you, or it's keeping something for you, or it's, you know, everyone goes through this, by the way. Like, I don't know, is that true that I don't know anyone? I don't know many people who don't wind up, if they're left to their own devices, keeping about twice as much as a stranger would keep if they were sorting the stuff for them. So yeah. it's not an unusual thing, but it's in terms of, like, let me ask you in a slightly different way. How much does it matter that your basement gets clear?
Very much so.
Okay. Well, you know, then I'll revert to plan B, which is have somebody else do it for you. Because
come on over.
They aren't gonna just get pizza. They aren't gonna have the thinking about it.
Really, you know, that's actually brilliant because I can do that for other people, not myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and you'll, like I say, you'll come to your own conclusion about it, but that's all that's going on. It's not a problem. It's not, oh, your mind is this or that. It's like, yeah, sometimes we have a lot of thinking about stuff.
Okay.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
All right. So if you want to get in, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. If you like the kind of things we talk about on the show, you can visit us online at supercoach.com. And let's see what we've got coming up. I've got a holiday coming up, which I'm jolly excited about. But you guys don't have to take a holiday because I've been pre-recording some interviews. So we've got coming up, and I don't know the order they're playing them in, but coming up next week will either be an interview with Elsie Spittle, who, those of you who don't know her, she's the author of four books on these principles that I talk about, mind, consciousness, and thought, and just an absolutely beautiful human being. And then in a couple weeks after that with Dr. Robert Holden. And if you want to come see me live, if you're in Europe, I'm going to be in Denmark. I'm going to be, my Thrive Intensive is sold out. There will be a new one coming up in New Orleans in December, the weekend of the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and they do tend to sell out early. So if you go to supercoach.com, sign up for our newsletter, you'll be notified when it goes live, and you can make sure to get your name down for that. But also we're going to be doing some coaching and leadership workshops, and anyways, it's all there. You can find it. So we were talking about accountability. Remember that? And I don't know what you were talking about, but I was talking with you about the ultimate accountability, that the ultimate accountability is the recognition that we create our own reality. We create our experience of reality. That we are living in the feeling of our thinking. We are living in a thought-created projection. The mind works more like a projector than a camera. And then we experience it as if it's coming back at us. But it's all being created moment by moment. You know, one of my friends, he and I were talking about this last night, and he was saying that he really kind of catches himself because he'll like see it in his wife, and he'll see his wife losing herself in thought. And I'll see her getting just absolutely wrapped up in something in her head. And then, you know, one of their kids will come and ask her a question, and she'll pop out, and she'll be kind of right back to the moment and right back to her own wisdom and her common sense and her kind of best self. And then she'll slip back into her head, and he kind of, you know, in his mind, he's thinking, oh, if only she knew what I knew. And, oh, you know, my poor wife, you know, one day perhaps I'll be able to help her end her suffering. And then 20 minutes later, he's all pissed off about something, and he suddenly dawns on him, oh, crap, I'm doing it too. I'm totally lost in my head. I've totally lost the moment. I'm totally disconnected from my deeper self. And one of the analogies for it that just always makes me laugh is that, He said it's like walking down the street with a close-up magician, and you know that he's a close-up magician, and you know that he does these tricks that look real, these illusions, but you fall for it every time. And that's kind of what understanding how it all works, how the mind works, does. It's not that it stops you from falling for it, but you just catch on quicker. It just becomes apparent earlier in the game. You know, it's like dreams. One of my daughters is obsessed with the idea of lucid dreaming. And, you know, we talk about it when we walk the dogs, about, oh, how can I get better at lucid dreaming? And she occasionally has them, and she loves them. And, you know, one of the things is that you just start to catch on to the fact of the dream a little earlier in the dream. So, you know, she was telling me about this dream where, you know, there was a unicorn and she wanted to turn into a mermaid, but she was a fairy, and her sister, stole the magic so that she couldn't use it. And she said, and then my friend Isabel kept asking me what time it was. And she said, and the third time she asked me what time it was, I realized, oh, well, this has to be a dream because Isabel always wears a watch. And she kind of woke up inside the dream and began to lucid dream. Well, we both thought it was pretty funny that the unicorns didn't wake her up. The fairies and mermaids didn't wake her up. The magic didn't wake her up. But her friend who always wears a watch asking her what time it is, that's how she woke up. Well, look, that's us, right? Whatever it is that wakes us up to our deeper self, what wakes us up from our thought dream, it could be something very ordinary. It could be something, you know, like a glitch in the matrix, just something where it's just a little like a, wait a minute. But the more we look in that direction, the more we understand that that's what's creating our experience, the quicker we wake up from it. And so like, if you think of a bounce back curve, like a resilience curve, which normally is like an inverted bell curve. So, you know, you're going along and then something happens and you drop and then you gradually come out and then you're kind of back to yourself. Well, it shallows out the you. We don't go down as deep. We don't necessarily stay down as long. And we come up more gently and more quickly because we don't get as deeply lost in the dream. And that's one of the payoffs of the ultimate accountability, of seeing that we are living in the experience of thought, that we are living in a reality that is being created in the mind, is we don't mind so much. You know, there's a sales guy I know who's telling me about his team were trained in this, and they all really started to see it and got excited about it. And he said it was amazing. He said they started outselling the competition in their field 5-1. And he said one of the guys on the sales team turned to the boss and said, you know, if this recession goes on a couple months longer, we're going to own this industry. That's the payoff of the ultimate accountability. Because they're not looking for a source of their disappointment. They're not thinking, oh, well, I'm worried because it's a bad economy. I'm down because this guy was rude to me. They go, no, I'm living in the feeling of my thinking. And my thinking will change. And as my thinking changes, my experience will change. And because the nature of the mind is resilient, the nature of our being is well, it's always, as soon as my mind settles down, that good feeling is going to come back in. That sense of hope and possibility is going to come back in. That mojo, that indefinable something that kind of makes life fun, that life force, that deeper mind starts to come back in, and we're right back on our game as if it never happened, good as new. Let's go back to the phones. Let's take a long-time caller, a long-time listener, Dan in Philadelphia. Welcome back, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, Michael. It's nice to talk with you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. What's on your mind today?
I'm not sure if it's a comment or a question. I live a rather basic, simple life. I liked what you said earlier about being accountable for peace on Earth, and rather that nobody really can do that because there's sort of like, you know, 7 billion variables. But I'm a little bit scattered, and I don't know. I guess I have to calm my mind down, and it's just interesting because I don't see in my future or anything changing too much, but I just want to be the best person I can be. I want to be kind to people. I want to just interact in my community the best I can. And I guess I have thoughts that's not enough, you know, and that I should be doing more with my life or something else. And we could get into the ego or whatever, but I just wanted your feedback on that.
Sure. Well, you know, my starting point. So the first thing that comes to mind, and this is a very kind of common thing. I was actually literally talking to a client in Italy about this morning, and they were talking about, you know, their concern that they were lazy. Mm-hmm. And at first we were talking about where they put the lazy line, because, you know, lazy is a bit of an arbitrary label. It's like, at what point does it become lazy? But then as we talked further, as we looked at it further, we realized, well, lazy's kind of a bizarre thing to even make up. Like, to even make a distinction, lazy. Because if it's arbitrary, at what point we trigger the distinction, then why would we do it? And we thought, well, you do it to motivate, you know, because you don't want to be this. So we try and motivate ourselves to action by thinking of ourselves as lazy and thinking of lazy as bad. There's so many layers of thought in that. And if you strip that away, if you kind of go, well, look, what else you got? Like, I get all that. And in that thought created reality, all of that is relevant. But since we made it up, let's see what else gets made up if we let go of that idea for a little while. And so when this client and I were talking, what we came to is that ideas like laziness and procrastination are a misdirection in questions of effectiveness and results. So if we'd like to be more effective in our lives, and if we'd like to create better results, that's why we care about things like laziness and procrastination, right? I mean, there may be some self-esteem stuff in there about going to hell if you're a bad person and all that. So that could be there too. But for our purposes, let's take the idea that, you know, that the reason that we care that we procrastinate, the reason we care that we're not doing enough, is because we'd like to create certain results or contribute to certain results, and we'd like to be more effective in doing it. Now, are you with me so far? Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, it almost reminds me of when somebody says, oh, I want to be normal. Well, what is normal anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And it reminds me of another topic from a show way back, which is normal versus natural. And I guess I kind of want to... you know, just live the natural process of things and just be led by that instead of my thinking about fitting into a mold or something.
Well, so let's take this a step further then. Let's go ahead and look at it. So if we want to get better results or, you know, contribute more to certain results, we want to be more effective. There's no version of reality that I'm aware of where creating character flaws for us to overcome is going to help us achieve that aim. It's just the wrong conversation to be in. So it was sort of like with that caller earlier where we started talking about her thinking and we wound up talking about her basement, because in the end it was just really she just wanted a clean basement. Well, it's the same thing. If there's something you want to create in the world, that's, you know, there are things that will help you create it. The kind of person you are and what you think of yourself as a person and what other people think of you as a person has zero to do with your effectiveness and your ability to create results. So I guess the place that I would invite you to go, Dan, and it's two places, but and you can go either or neither or both. So one is to look, if there's, you know, if you are interested in world peace, you know, if you are wanting to make your neighborhood a better place, if there are specific things, not abstract things, but specific results you'd like to contribute to the creation of, let them be just results and see how it's different to work with them as just basements to clean, not things that say something about you. Okay, that would be the first one. The second one is when you get kind of all wound up, like I'm guessing right now you're already a bit more settled down than you were when you got on the call.
Yeah, I was pretty scattered when I first called. But yeah.
But here's the thing. You have enough wisdom that you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So wisdom is always with us at whatever level we're able to hear it at. And so if you keep looking to that whatever that part of you is that knew, wow, I'm a bit scattered right now, it might be a good time to call in or to do something to settle myself down, as opposed to just kind of go for a ride on these magic carpet thoughts, right? That wisdom part, the more you look to it, the more it will guide you. Because it's you. That is you. That's your deeper self. What Elsie Spittle in the interview that will be coming up in a few weeks said, called our true identity. And the more you see it, the more you get to be in relationship with it. So that's the second thing. And the third thing, and the last thing, and I've probably given you too many things here, but what the heck? The last thing is just to really respect your own process and recognize that it will at times look like other people's process, and at times it won't look anything like other people's process. Because
trusting who I am, yeah.
Yeah, because you started in a different place. You have different thoughts in you, and, you know, your journey will be different. The great equalizer, the thing that puts you on an even playing field with everyone else, is we're all being guided by mind. We're all living in the feeling of our thinking, and we all have this capacity to go deeper and see deeper in consciousness.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. What I'm hearing from that is that I'm going to trust in who I am. I'm going to just stay in the conversation. That's the best way I just move along with life. So,
you see, you should try hosting the show, Dan, because you would have just saved us about 5 minutes. That's what I was trying to say, too.
Okay. Well, I'll take that into consideration, and I'll try to choose between door number one, door number two, or door number three. So
they're all there for you when you want. Thanks, Dan.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, that's such a... it's so easy to miss wisdom when we're kind of whacked out. And I'm not saying Dan was whacked out, but, you know, when we're kind of going all crazy in our heads, we think we don't have access to wisdom, but we miss things like the fact that Dan knew to phone in and settle himself down. We miss things like, you know, it occurs to us that we're going a little crazy. That is wisdom. That's just the level we can hear it on in that moment. And then if we listen, I don't want to say listen deeper, because even I don't know how to listen deeper, but we keep listening. Like Dan said, we stay in the conversation. When I say stay in the conversation, at one level, sure, I'm saying stay in the conversation with me, but really the real conversation you're in is with your own wisdom. That's the conversation you want to stay in. You want to stay in the conversation with mind, with the deeper mind, with that animating spirit, that intelligence and energy before the thoughts, that space out of which all the thinking comes that drives you crazy when it drives you crazy and gets you excited when it gets you excited. That's the space where miracles happen. That's the space of meditation. Not the practice of meditation, but the state of meditation. Of quiet. Of stillness. Of joy, of peace. It's the space where our natural ebullience, I'm not even sure if that's how you pronounce that word. Ebullient? Somebody can tell me on Facebook, facebook.com/mneil. I don't know how to pronounce it. But where our natural effusiveness, this natural love of life, it comes up into that space. And it can get pushed down with thought. But as soon as the thoughts lighten up, or we lighten up around them, it comes right back up to the surface. And that's the beauty of the system. That's the kindness of the design. Everything in us is designed to move us in the direction of health, of a higher stasis, a higher level of equilibrium, a higher balance. The Aikido master, Morihei Ueshiba, they used to say that he became so attuned that he could feel movement at one. I suspect a lot of these kind of legends get a little legendized, but you know, they said for 20 miles. And so when he traveled, you know, they would try and kind of keep this radius around him, this circuit around him, so that, you know, the master wouldn't be disturbed. But he himself said, when being told, being praised that he was the most centered man alive, you know, he said, actually, I'm continually out of balance, but I'm continually returning to center. And that's us, right? It's not that we have to somehow stay in this Zen-like place where, you know, all is bliss. We will never be moved from here. And, you know, we get mad at life for harshing our mellow, right? It's that because we know we're continually returning to center, because we know the natural direction is towards our health, it's towards our wisdom, it's towards that deeper part of us that points true north in every moment. It doesn't matter so much if we get off course, if we do lose our bearings, because we know the whole system's designed to take us back home. So not only, right? Don't order yet, kids. Not only do you get the ultimate accountability of creating your own reality where you can do absolutely anything, but also you also get to be in a system that's designed for your good, that's designed to move you back towards peace, to move you back towards that deepest spiritual part of ourselves, back home, back to spirit, back to source, back to God. However you conceive of it, the whole game is there. The whole mechanism is designed to take you back to that default setting of peace, that default setting of clarity where wisdom is available moment by moment. And well-being comes up and other feelings come up. Maybe sadness comes up, but it comes up and it passes through because it's made of thought. It's ephemeral. It's made of fairy dust and unicorns. and maybe as you listen, the next time you get caught up, you won't have to wait until you wade through the unicorns and fairy dust and mermaids until your friend Isabel says, "What time is it? What time is it? What time is it?" And you go, "Oh, I must be caught up because Isabel always wears a watch." And if nothing else, part of the ultimate accountability is recognizing that how much time you spend looking in this direction, how much of your life you make about a deeper relationship with an understanding of mind, consciousness, and thought, and your true identity, and your spiritual core, and your peace, and the wisdom within. It's pretty much up to you. You can't make it happen, but you can orient yourself in that direction. You can aim yourself towards that. You can aim yourself inwards, and you won't lose touch with the world, right? That's what's cool. You know, sometimes people think, oh, I don't want to get lost in my own navel. Well, okay, look, you might get lost in your own navel for a bit. But my experience is that if you go deep enough, this is a weird analogy. If you go deep enough into your navel, you come out the other side and you're back in the world, but it's a different world. The world has changed because you have changed. You see a different world because you're looking with new eyes, because you've had insight. You've had fresh thought. You've made space for something new to come through. And when you make space for something new to come through, something new comes through. And the bit that's up and down to you that you can take accountability for is simply looking in that direction. And then there's nothing you have to do. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Please leave your comments on the Facebook page, facebook.com/mneil. Check us out online at supercoach.com. Follow us on Twitter at @Michael_Neil. And until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.